Yo.
How we doing, guys? So I want to open up with a little recommendation to help us get more views. I'm thinking, obviously,
I want to hide the sponsor.
Hide sponsorship, they might sue us. I'm thinking dad bods are really in right now.
I have one, 100%.
I was going to say that. I was going to say we both put on weight. And, you know, maybe in like, huh?
Have we?
No, I'm saying if we both put on weight, maybe like a month's time, you know, just eat all around us. In a month's time, we do a video where we're like shirtless and we cover each other in donut glaze. I'll do like a classic vanilla. You'd be like the pink and sprinkles for Simpsons. Yeah. And then we lick each other.
Nice.
What do you think?
I feel like you have more of a dad bod than me just because you're more hairy than me.
Like, I'm a very hairy man, that is true.
You are fucking my chest. Hairy guy.
I'm not insecure about my chest. I'm insecure about shaving my chest. I've like never done it.
Show them.
Well, it's got to get clickbait. Clickbait right here, true, baby. Yeah. Come on, get that Irish chest.
That would be funny if you... Imagine you started a podcast. Like, obviously, you've put on a lot of weight.
Oh my God. That's what you thought I was saying. No, that's not what I was saying. I was saying we put on weight next month. No, you look fine.
Cheers.
Good just God. Fine. No, you're just a handsome fine man. If I was gay, I would.
Okay, fair enough.
Anyhow, starting off with in a very weird way. Guys, welcome to the Lynn Sebastian Evan Simpsons podcast. The podcast myself and Sebastian do just so once a year we get to cover Trials of Horror.
Yeah.
Who are we kidding?
You know, I was just talking to Dylan earlier about the fact that when I joined this podcast, started this podcast ages ago.
That is true.
But when I joined this podcast, it still wasn't like a trend of like generic white guys with no personality starting a podcast. But
yeah.
Now it's become a trend. So like people I meet that find out I have a podcast, they're like, oh, of course.
And of course,
like,
you have a podcast.
But Dylan made a good point that
yes, I think so.
We have a theme.
Uh-huh.
With this,
we have something that we talk about that keeps it focused. Yeah. We can go into tangents, and
we don't just think we're interesting and then get some mates in a room and talk about Andrew Tate.
Nonsense. Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, you can't say anything anymore. I also would say this only come into my head now. Another thing that makes us a little bit different and interesting is that I'm Irish and you're English, so there's that fun little dynamic going on.
You know, usually Irish and English people wouldn't sit in a room together and have a conversation.
Okay, so can you name one other podcast with an Irish and an English guy? I'm sure there are, but I can't think of any.
We need to start branding that aspect of it more.
That's true, actually. Yeah, that's. Yeah. I mean, it's not something that I find interesting, but you know, there are people who do. Like, yeah. Oh, it's an Irish guy, an English guy. Yeah, we never talk about it.
And we're brothers, apparently. Like someone at work.
Loads of times that happened to us. Yeah.
Like, but someone at work recently, like, started going around saying that I had a podcast, but they said that I do it with my brother.
He's obviously never listened to it. He's just seen the visuals.
Because then if he actually heard it, he'd be like, oh,
obviously they're not related.
That would make no sense.
Maybe we could be cousins, you know. Yeah. You could have cousins from a different country, but brothers.
I don't think we look alike, but we're not far off.
No,
we have
it could
very
be
similar,
related
like
skin tone, hair
eyes.
Color eyes. Yeah, there are similarities going on for sure. Yeah.
But you know, if I said that about another group of people, I'd be in trouble. So, no joke.
You should be not wrong. But yeah, it happened so much. Yeah, I remember especially back when we were working together during, like, you know, still COVID times. So we had the masks on, so you could only see our hair and our eyes. We got that a lot. People be like, you guys brothers. Yeah.
Actually, something funny about this, something funny happened at work the other day. Some guy at work, who's black, there were like some lights that weren't working, and he was like making some sort of like gesture to me, but I couldn't see him.
Yeah.
And I went, I don't know what you're doing because I can't see you. And he was like, you can't be making them jokes. Which is very good.
That is very funny. Anyhow, guys, yes, let's jump into the episode. So yeah, as I already mentioned, today we are reviewing Treehouse of Horror 34, the fifth episode of the 35th season. So let's jump on in. We open up immediately, no like an introduction, like, you know, Treehouse of Horror 34 or anything, is banging to the Springfield Museum of Arts, and there's a sign saying, they filled the empty rooms because of art, they made us get back to other countries. Quimby announces that the museum is closed forever, and they all applaud, they're so happy. And he says that all their items will be digitized and sold as NFTs, whatever the hell those are. Do you understand what NFTs are?
Vaguely,
yeah.
My note on this part of the episode was, so far, so cringe.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't like when they do, like, it's good when they're modern, but when they do all this stuff, I find it a little bit.
Yeah, the problem. I don't want to be getting too reviewing too immediately, but this is my least favorite segment of the three for sure.
Yeah.
The problem with it is it's entertaining. It's fine. The problem with it is NFTs, like, it dates it immediately, and usually the quality of The Simpsons is that they're timely, you know? But, like, I don't think NFTs are going to be relevant in a few years' time.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I think they're already less relevant now than they were when this episode came out in October.
Like,
you know
what
I mean?
Still a thing, but they're definitely not talked about like they were.
As much as they were even going back, what was this, maybe 5 or 6 months ago? Like, no. But anyhow, yeah, Bart and Homer sneak in. They see the Easy Funge Art Digitizer, and Bart jumps in, mooning Homer, trying to get a NFT with that. And he disappears. Homer screams that he's lost him forever, and he pops up on his phone, and he screams with glee when he sees that he's made $1,500,000 off him. Where they get the title of the episode, Wild Barts Can't Be Token. They did an interesting thing with this Trials of Horror, I found, that they would show a little bit of the episode. They'd have an opening and then the title. That's never happened before, I don't think.
Yeah.
It would always be the title straight away, and here's a segment. They, like, kind of did a little warm-up and then a title. I don't know, it was a fun little way to mix it up, I guess. We cut to Homer going to Marge.
Honey, remember how we're always saying we wish Bart was less fungible?
Did something happen to Bart?
Only the parts you can hug. The rest is alive, right here on my phone.
My baby is an app!
No, apps actually do stuff. He's an NFT. But look how much he's worth!
For Bart. Imagine what we get for Lisa.
And then the Enlightenment enter, an organization set up to safeguard a digital verse. They tell Marge that she'll have to enter the blockchain to save Bart. The Enlightenment consists of Kylie Jenner, Ron Gronkowski, and Jimmy Fallon. Homer says that he thought they were just corporate shills, but they say that they would never endorse a product that they don't fully understand. And then Jimmy Fallon can't stop laughing. And Homer just goes, "You ruined cowbell." Do you get that reference at all?
Yeah.
Have you seen that sketch?
I have.
He's not wrong. It's a very cruel joke. It's a very funny sketch. Jimmy Fallon kind of, him laughing too much kind of just takes out of the sketch.
Does,
you know, yeah.
But
he has such a habit of doing
that. Who's that football player?
Ron Gronkowski.
So whenever I hear this guy's name or see him, I cringe a bit because...
Of the name?
No, because... I used to know this girl from uni.
Oh, yeah.
And for whatever reason, she was obsessed with America.
Okay.
Which I was like, really?
Yeah. Like, unlike me, doing a podcast about an American show.
No, but like, just loved like the culture and
in
everything.
In general, yeah.
And like, loved like Harley Davidson, leather jackets.
Oh,
and
geez.
She loved like American football.
Oh, sorry,
and
that's
as well,
so basic.
She was, at the time, New England Patriots were like the biggest NFL team,
the Tom
like
Brady
the titles,
yeah,
and she decided to support them. I'm like, okay, Glory Hunter,
yeah, totally.
But, she was obsessed with him, and
was
like,
he with the Patriots?
I think so,
yeah.
And like, was like always going on about how attractive she was. And I went to like some NFL like bars to watch games with her, and it was like,
where is this in London or Brighton?
In London,
right? Yeah,
and yeah. So whenever I see this guy now, sadly,
you just think of her.
I can't respect him.
Yeah, sure. I totally get that. That reminds me of freaking that lady I was talking about. Oh, this is so specific. I mean, what are the odds she'll watch this? I was talking to this lady on a dating app for a while who was absolutely obsessed with Tom Felton, who played Draco Malfoy.
I remember you telling me about this.
Yeah. I think he's a great actor and like a really cool guy. Like, he seems very genuine in interviews and stuff. Really respect like the way he's handled like the J.K. Rowling thing and stuff like that. I think he's like a really nice guy. But yeah, his image is kind of tainted for me because I think of that girl now who was just absolutely obsessed with him in such a weird, unhealthy way. I remember just like removing her, being like, this woman is clearly obsessed with a particular man who I'm not like in any way. I'll never be able to be Tom Felton. What a random guy to be obsessed with.
It makes dating really difficult, man. Like, if you're dating someone that's obsessed...
Who's glorifying a celebrity, yeah.
Yeah, it's a red flag regardless.
Totally.
Like, it's good that nothing progressed, but...
Yeah.
It makes it very difficult for the other person because they're, like, feeling like they have to live up to this guy.
I know.
That you're obsessed with. And I've never, ever been a fan of... You know, couples that are, like, together, and then they're like, oh, yeah, but, like, obviously, if Harry Styles, like, offers to have sex with me, I would.
The whole past thing, yeah.
The guy would be like, yeah, fair enough, like, if Margot Robbie like offered to have sex with me, I'd have to. And I'm like,
why are you even doing this ridiculous hypothetical that would never happen?
But also, you don't love each other then.
Yeah, because clearly
that makes no sense.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
It makes no sense. You're like, I'm not gonna cheat, but there's an exception here.
Yeah, and the exception is of celebrity. Yeah, it's so stupid. Totally agree. I mean, what made me like totally end this conversation with this girl is I was telling her when I met Tom Felton, I didn't even realize it was him because he was just such a genuine, nice, just seemed like a chill dude. Like, and when he walked away, my manager was like, "Do you not realize who that was?" And I was like, "No." He was like, "Draco Malfoy." And I told her that story. I told her my manager saying that. And she goes, "He's not Draco, he's Tom."
Yeah, oh my God.
Which, firstly, I'm not the one who said that.
Yeah.
So what are you giving out to me? And also, he's best known for playing Draco fucking Malfoy. So I think even he's accepting of that.
He's going to turn around and be like, "I'm not fucking Malfoy, right? I've done other stuff."
Yeah, same with Daniel Radcliffe. I'm sure he accepts that Harry Potter will always be his best known role. It's just a given. That
reminds me, you know, the Ron Weasley's dad in Harry Potter?
Yeah, yeah.
So he lives in Brighton.
Oh, yeah.
And he used to own a shop that was really near my college.
Oh, wow.
And one of my mates at the time went into the shop and he had no filter on what he would say. So he went
the
into
actor
the shop,
or your friend?
My friend.
Right, right.
And he saw him. He was like, "Ron Weasley's dad, Ron Weasley's dad." And then he got fucking
really
mental.
Come on, man.
And he was like, kicked him out of shop, and he was like almost following him and
wow,
getting really pissed off, and his wife had to like hold him back.
The hell?
Because my mate kind of provoked
in my head the wife is the same wife Harry Potter. It's obviously not.
And then she ends it with, "He's been in other stuff, you know," which is like the worst thing you could
shut
say.
Up. Yeah, we know he's an actor, obviously, but that's quite, how can you not be accepting when he obviously has made enough money from that part to do some random shop, probably little nice little passion hobby of his. How can you not be accepting that's always going to be your best known thing? Like, Andrew Garfield is an incredible actor who's done amazing, amazing parts. I'm sure he understands he'll always be mostly recognized for Spider-Man. It's just a given. Like, yeah, I would be cool with that. I wouldn't care. Yeah. Just a mainstream role that makes you money that you can then do risky, crazier parts like Daniel Radcliffe does now, and, you know? Nothing wrong with that.
Superhands from Peep Show.
Yes, I remember you telling me this. In a Nando's.
So sorry.
Yeah,
he was in a Nando's when me and my friends were there. I was like 16.
Yeah.
Oh, he's Superhands. I hadn't even seen Peep Show at that point. But someone was like, "Oh, he's Superhands."
Yeah.
And he was walking over to the sources and he just turned to us and he was like,
he was with his kids, right?
Yeah.
I guess he probably doesn't want his kids knowing about that, assuming they're younger.
Yeah.
Wouldn't want them knowing about it. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. Anyhow, They send Marge into the NFT verse. She enters a block train, speeding through the world created by crypto, fueled by FOMO. We see the FOMO meter. Just says, "Never heard of it. Saw a tweet about it. Mentioned on the Today Show." An Uber driver says, "Go for it," and mortgage the house. A prom night. Great little animation of all the little NFTs here as well. Definitely some cool experimenting going on there. That was the most interesting part of the segment, I think, was the animation here. We see a prom night mixtape tells her that it's the last call where all the NFTs of low value go, which is 90% of all NFTs. She tries to make her way to the front of the train, which is where Bart is, because he's such a high value. She increases in value after accidentally killing a French egg, progressing to a room of cat NFTs. She says cash was poured in on Marge because of her disruption, which caused a lot of intrigue, and then she starts killing all the cats. Again, very cool animation there. She's like, "Nothing personal, hope you can't feel pain." And a montage just happens of her killing Itchy and Scratchy. She kills a golden poochie with diamond hands. Very random.
This felt like a Rick and Morty episode.
Yeah, true. There's literally an episode of Rick and Morty on the train. Yeah, actually quite similar vibes.
This whole, like, episode just felt Rick and Morty, like
we're an NFT Morty. Yeah, I can totally see that happening.
Just suddenly progressed into this like mad
manic world. Yeah, her killing people. Yeah, I can totally see that. Oh jeez, Rick, I'm stuck in the NFT world. I can totally see that being Rick and Morty. Very true. Yeah, we cut out to the real world. Homer and Lisa are watching her skyrocket in price as human NFTs have become more sought after, and Kirk enters with Milhouse.
"Dad, you said you were taking me to bumper boats."
"I am. Have some more chocolate milk." "No one is putting another child into that scanner before mine."
Actually, this is my favorite bit of the segment. They throw in Ralph and Milhouse and they enter and fuse together.
That was crazy.
That was brilliant. Yeah. Like, please, kid. kill Ralph House?
These are the bits I loved about this segment.
Yeah, yeah, just the fun random bits for sure. It's really experimenting with something they could never do in the regular show, obviously. After killing them, Marge increases to $10 million. She enters the front of the train with all the most valuable NFTs, and she sees Bart is being treated like royalty. And she kills his monkey butler. Bart just goes, "You never like my friends." We come back to the real world. Burns is asking Homer to not let his son become a worthless human being again, but to instead sell him to him for $100 million. Lisa stops him, but Homer says it's his first chance to not miss out after he's missed out on everything, like the housing bubble, the first tech bubble, and the current tech bubble.
Did you go past the bit where Milhouse was drinking Kahlua?
Kahlua? Yeah, well, I didn't spot that.
Coffee liqueur.
No, I didn't spot that. When's he drinking Kahlua? He's dead now, so I definitely skipped it.
Okay, yeah. So he's with his dad, and
yeah,
and he's drinking, like, downing a bottle of Kahlua.
Oh, he's like, yeah,
which
drink.
Which is what they use in, like, espresso martinis. It's coffee liqueur.
Yeah, yeah, because Kirk's like, he's like, what are we doing here? Like, shut up, Milhouse, have more chocolate milk.
Yeah.
But it was a coffee drink.
Yeah, yeah, that was it.
That's but hilarious. Like, I didn't even spot that.
Are they allowed to show that?
It's only because it's a cartoon, I think. Yeah,
it's got alcohol in it.
Live action, you couldn't do that. Yeah, fair enough. You can only do it because of a cartoon, I would imagine. Yeah, because there's an episode from season 17 I remember when they go to Italy and Lisa's drinking red wine.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I suppose you can literally only do that because it's a cartoon. I guess, like, legally speaking, they're voiced by adults. That makes it okay. Whether if it's a real live child actor, obviously they wouldn't be drinking real alcohol. But sort of if it's you know, yeah, I'm sure there's some legality thing there you can't do, but I'm sure you totally get away with that in animation, yeah. Where were we? Lisa warns Marge to get out before Homer cracks and sells both of them. They get out right after Homer sells, and Bart's like, "Where is he? I want to tell him the inside of his phone smells." She reveals that Homer has sold himself. We cut to him in the same place Bart just was. He's getting pampered at the top of the train. And he eats a twerk chicken. So she was like, "Ooh, twerk chicken." It's obviously a twerky. The train stops as his value decreases. And a pizza cat tells him that the NFT crash is over. His huge dough causes a massive avalanche. He's like, the romance of train travel. And that's the end of the segment. Do you want to cover each one as we go, or just do it at the end?
At the end.
At the end, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. So, yeah, then we jump into the second segment then. It is Thursday, October 7th, 1993, which is exactly the date that the original Cape Fear episode came out. Fun reference there. And it's the end of that actual episode, the classic episode of season 5, obviously anybody listening to this podcast knows. And they did this thing they did before in the episode about them predicting stuff from the future, where they used the old school animation, which I thought was so great. And it's that bit of Bob performing... he remains an Englishman to Bart, but he stops. It was like an alternative ending to the episode.
I love the way that they like animated it in the exact same style.
Yeah, yeah, as I'm saying. Yeah,
looked like it was straight out like
season 5. Yeah, yeah, totally. No, it's so cool that he did that. Yeah, he stops and he's like, "Did you only ask me to sing to stall your gruesome debt?" And he's like, guilty as charged. And Bob stabs him as Lisa watches from the window. And we then cut to 30 years later. I thought it was such a clever thing to do. Give us an alternate ending to probably one of the show's darkest episodes. You know, like, what would happen if Bob actually did kill him? If he got what he was looking for. We cut to Lisa teaching a lecture on the dark side of serial killing. And tells him that it was only through her hunch that they found the East Side Strangler on the west side of town. And I remember the audience asked how she overcame childhood trauma to become the world's most renowned criminal psychologist. She says they'll have to read her book, Mind the Mindhunter, A Profile on Profiling. Very good. And Officer Muntz enters, couldn't have picked a better character. He goes, "I told you I'd smell you later." And she looks at a photo of them, or he looks at a photo of them as kids, and he's like, look at us. We thought we were never going to, we thought we were going to stay young forever. And Lisa just goes, "Some of us did." Like, oh, right, like Bart, because he got murdered. That's so dumb. He says that a killer left, he thinks a killer left a message for her. We got to, it's just spelled out in guts. "Hi, Lisa." And we get the title of the episode again, just 8. We see that an adult Rod is killed And she says that he may have grown up to become a shockingly foul-mouthed rock comedian, but he didn't deserve this. Great choice of character there, I thought, because we don't really have any emotional attachment to Raj.
Super graphic.
Super graphic.
Whoa, that's crazy.
But I think it was a good choice of character because we don't feel an emotional attachment to Rod, really.
Yeah,
so seeing him die isn't upsetting.
Decapitated.
yeah, exactly. Like, even if it was Todd, it'd be darker, but Rod was, like, a good choice. She says the killer clearly, she's like investigating it all, kind of like Sherlock. She says the killer clearly took his time, he had fun with it. We see they'd done X's and O's with the blood. They enjoyed a game of solitaire. She sees that a red king is on a red queen, which makes her realize this psycho doesn't play by the rules. She can also see that the killer walked in and had one of those moments when you walk into a room and forget what you came in for, which I thought was great. Obviously, we've all experienced that. Like, how could you experience that walking into somebody else's house when you're going to kill them? And Nelson's like, oh my god, he's missed that. And she's like, don't stop now. There will be others. And then Doc comes in and is like, Sarge, there's been another. We see that Martin's been killed. He's been hung like a clock. And same message that was there for Rod. It just says, Martin Prince is the first. She's starting to wonder, like, how could he also be the first? And then there's been another one. Dermot Spuckler was hung out to dry. Also says Dermot Spuckler is the first. That was the most graphic one, I thought. His,
oh my god,
his carcass was like hung on a clothesline and his regular body on the side. Really,
definitely
really gruesome.
One of the most like messed up episodes I've seen.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
In terms of how graphic it was.
It makes you realize just how much the show can get away with because it's rated 12s. If a new show came out today trying to get a 12 rating but did that, they'd be like, no, this is a 15.
Yeah.
You know, this just gets away because they're kind of like grandfathered in now because it's been going on for so
Lisa,
long.
Lisa in this episode is giving me big like Jodie Foster vibes.
Clearly her
Science
and
Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah,
thing.
Clearly her and Sidra Bob are like Clarence Starling and Hannibal Lecter.
It like wasn't obvious though, and it could technically not.
Yeah, it wasn't
be
in your face. Yeah, for sure. It was weird that they chose 8 as like the kind of pun. I guess it's obvious because Lisa is 8.
Yeah.
It doesn't really have any similarities to 7.
7, yeah.
Not really, yeah. Because obviously even Nelson was the officer in Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
He wasn't Brad Pitt in 7, you know. And yeah, then Doc was in again, like, there's been another one. And on their way to seeing the other one before they even see it, Sarge, there's been another.
They
don't even look at it.
They should have called it Sideshow of the Bob.
Sideshow of the Bob? Oh. That took me a moment, but I do like it. That is fun. We didn't see they made Sherry into like a kind of mouse trap game, and it's like very elaborately like leading up to turning on the coffee maker. And she realized that there's only one person that can get inside a mind this deranged. We then cut to Springfield Maximum Security Prison. The little sign is saying, rent us out for your corporate escape room. Yeah, she's talking to Sideshow Bob. Bob says she's really made something out of herself after he made mincemeat out of her brother. It's like, come say thank you. I love Sideshow Bob. Always just great to see Kelsey Grammer back in that part. He plays him so tremendously. He tells her that he can't reveal all of the killer's clues to her. Lisa says that this meeting was pointless. And then Bob's a little limerick for her. He goes,
perhaps a limerick will help. There once was a shiny machete that turned poor Bartet to spaghetti.
You're gonna die in that cell, Bob. And when that happens, wherever I am, I'll be dancing.
We then cut to the graveyard. We see that all the family has died apart from Lisa. We see Bart Simpson brutally slain, Marge Simpson died of sorrow, and Homer Simpson choked on tennis ball. I thought it was funny, but Amelia thought to myself, imagine if gravestones actually said how the person died.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be so grim.
I know.
Imagine just cancer.
Yeah,
slipped on a banana peel.
I never realised that, but in like cartoons and movies and stuff.
They always do that, yeah.
Yeah.
You would never do that in real life. That'd be horrible.
Yeah.
Imagine walking down a graveyard and seeing all that, like.
Yeah, I know. Like,
choked on a stake.
Brutally murdered in an alley.
Yeah. His wife killed him. You wouldn't be able to stop looking, though, because obviously we do have a sick mind like that.
You'd be intrigued by everyone's grave.
Yeah, you'd have to keep reading, yeah totally. Yeah. I'd be too invested by all these people died. And yeah, they're at Sherry's funeral. It just says Sherry McElberry, which is the first time ever revealing their surname. And it says, beloved wife, creepy sister. And Terry says that no one would ever want to hurt her big sister, and she doesn't realize how she died. She says he calls her a big sister because she was born first. And she like locks hands with Sherry's husband. It's like, probably only makes sense that you're my husband now. And Lisa realizes that everyone killed was a firstborn, and she tries to piece together the anagram They cut to Anagram Spooky Abandoned Slaughterhouse. It was going to be cryptic. It's got to be anagrams. And Nelson gets ahead of Lisa and gets stabbed with a meat hook. And Lisa discovers that... discovers him hanging from multiple meat hooks. Again, yeah, super, super graphic. She discovers that the lair is a replica of her old bedroom. And she checks the footage and sees that it's her who kills Nelson. We then cut back to the prison. It's Bob... Bob's being brought in by a guard, and he's complaining that if the chateau insists on calling it Taco Tuesday, he can't expect them to not make a fuss. He's thrown to a new cell, and Lisa's in the cell, knowing that she killed enough people in horrific ways, she'd be sent to the same prison as him, but need a little help to be sent to his exact cell. And we see the guard is Maggie, which is a fun little twist, because I didn't even realize that she wasn't there in the graves earlier. She reveals that she has a split personality, and Bob just goes, "Oh, trope alert, call the First Thought Police." Which, I don't know, I thought it was a good twist. I wasn't very fond of them making fun of the twist. Because I actually liked it.
I didn't mind it.
Yeah, I didn't have anything against it. Then they were making fun of it being, like, tropey. I don't know, Yadi Smith's voice acting in this bit was fantastic as well. She says that Lisa was her second last victim. Bob just goes, "Oh, the penultimate!" And he tries to run away and goes into a rake. Had to throw that in somewhere. She then starts playing Englishman, the song that he was singing to Bart, as she grabs Bob and starts stabbing him. We cut to Maggie outside the cell, just like very chilly, letting it all happen. And yeah, that concludes this segment. I guess again, we'll wait till the end, but I thought this one was fantastic. And we cut to our final segment. We open up in the nuclear power plant. Homer is eating donuts in the turbine room, and Smithers points to a sign saying, "No eating in here, since always."
Also, the donut box says one per person.
Oh, yeah, that was great too, yeah. He's just chowing down all of them, classic Homer. And Homer goes on a big tangent, being like, "The nanny state wins again. No tanning in the reactor core. No tanning, no what while driving? I can't read my writing here. No something while driving. Fun Homer gag. And no eating ribs while driving. And no trimming your hedges with a machine gun. Why did everyone get so scared?" He says the world would be a better place if people had more common sense like him. He drops a donut and chases after it, and it gets soaked in nuclear waste, and it heads into Burns' life extension laboratory. We see there's multiple animals in there. And also Animal from the Muppets, very randomly.
Yeah, random.
He then eats the donut. He's like, "Oh, Homer 1, Nanny State 0.
It reminded me of the SpongeBob episode with the Nasty Patty.
Oh, yeah, so true. Yeah, even the green and everything going on. Yeah, it looked very similar to how fucking disgusting it looked. Oh. It looked so grim. When you cut to him in bed, and he's like moaning in his sleep. "Oh, stupid radioactive garbage donut. Multiply my DNA while I sleep." He then goes out to get the morning paper the next morning, and there's none by Flanders' house. He's like, "Hey, who stole my Flanders' newspaper?" And Flanders comes out saying that he filled out the crossword so he could enjoy it too. And then he burps a big green, disgusting burp on him. And he's like, "Oh, better from the chimney than the furnace." We didn't cut to Flanders at church. Lovejoy is informing them that...
"So you see, there's nothing in the Bible that says a pastor and his wife can't take separate vacations."
That was one of my favorite, just like, throwaway gags. That was very funny. Really, I love Reverend Lovejoy, how consistent they are with, like, him just, like, hating his job and clearly not being very religious. I love that Flanders is, like, clearly the more devout Christian than he is. So great. Then Flanders starts like break down, and Todd's like, "Are you being tickled by the Holy Spirit?" He then turns into Homer. He's like, "I never read it into Home Diddly Homer." He questions why he's in church when the football is on, and his burp turns them all into Homer, and we see them all coming out. This segment made me so happy. Just like exactly what we want to see.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Just, yeah.
So great. Just Homer versions of everyone in Springfield. As they're all coming out, we see a Homer version of Helen saying, "Kiss my ass, Churchos." A gay guy. Only he's a specific character here, which is some gay guy. He's like, "I'm fat, I'm bald, I never felt sexier, baby." We see Kirk strangling Milhouse, and Nelson and Homer being like, "Woohoo!" That one was great.
There's been some great
little puns
moments
in
these three segments.
For sure, yeah. There's like little random bits, totally. That one was great. Was a Kirk version of Homer and a Milhouse version of Homer strangling.
I love how they so good. Brought back the strangling.
They were very quick
in a good way, in a different way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think when they're doing it now, it's clever. Because look, we've seen the regular versions of Homer strangling Bart enough anyway, so If you're going to bring it back, it'd have to be like fun little random ones like that. Like that one was great, yeah. And then we get the title of the episode. It's called Louse Break. Ken Brockman's reporting that citizens of every age, race, and catchphrase are transforming into bald doofuses. We've got the Disco Stew coming out of a lard lad being like, "Donuts, Stew has diabetes type 2. And Brockman turns into Homer. He's like, "News is stupid. Somebody put on wrestling." We see Bart and Lisa watching this. Lisa says she knows that butt scratch from anywhere. And the CIA break in and take Bart and Lisa away. And while they're in a helicopter in the air, we also spot a Homer version of Kang Kodos, which is a fun little way to bring them in. So obviously you have to bring them in somehow in every Trials of Horror. Yeah. That was a clever one. Frank tells them that they need Homer's DNA to cure the virus, and they're the only ones impervious to it, because they have the same DNA as him, obviously. They ask where they could find Homer, and Bart says it is 11:30 a.m. So they head to Moe's. Great sequence. All the Homers are there drinking in Moe's, and Moe's covered himself up to protect himself, and says that this is the best thing that's ever happened to him. So good. And he's serving a Homer version of Santa's Little Helper, like, into a dog bowl. Like, here you are, Santa's Little Homer.
That reminds me.
Very good.
You know BrewDog?
Yes.
Their pubs have dog beer.
Oh, really?
You take your dog.
Wow.
And
would it get them drunk? Surely not.
No, it's just like a beer that a non-alcoholic beer that a dog would like.
A dog would like. That's pretty cute. I love that. That's clever, yeah. Especially got them drunk. I mean, dogs always act drunk anyway. You wouldn't even notice. Yeah, just getting more excited, yeah. He says this, Bart says he wasn't at the bowling alley, the candy store, or mocking the hippos at the zoo. They find a bucket of Ray's House of Beaks, like a chicken bucket. It just says, "We even batter the butter." Great little detail. He says that when he eats that chicken, he always spends the next day at the men's room of the car wash. They go to the car wash, and Frank's like, "Is this really the most convenient bat room for your father?" And he says it's the closest one that Mom would let him use. And he comes out, and he's shook that someone left a perfectly good back scratcher in the bathroom. Frank takes him to the helicopter, and he's like, "Just board the Frinkocopter." One of his men is like, "We're not calling it that." It's like, "And then we'll pop your DNA into the Frinktabular." It's like, "We're not calling it that." He just wanted to put his name into everything. He says that Homer says he doesn't want this. He doesn't want things to go back to normal because people are starting to think like he does, and not making stupid rules about bicycle hamlets. Super rules about where you can smoke cigars and you can drive without a seatbelt now, and you can FaceTime while jaywalking. He's going on a big tangent about how people are living more like him now, living their best lives, and while this is happening, everyone's dying as a result of it. He calls it a meetopia, but Frink says that he hardly wants everyone being like him, and he just goes, "Earth-shattering reveal," and he opens the back of the van, and Marge has turned into Homer, and she's watching something on an iPad, and he's like, "Oh, why did insurance commercials get so funny?" He says that, great little work from Dan Kessler throughout the whole this whole segment, actually, doing Homer versions of characters. He did it very, very well, especially, I think, characters that he doesn't voice. I thought he did a great job, like, doing a Homer version of Marge and everything. Really, really well done. But he says cooperating with them is the... Frank says cooperating with them is the only way to turn Marge back. And Homer just goes, "Oh, you never looked more beautiful." I loved that reveal because I did think it was going to be, oh, he sees his wife as him now and he doesn't want that and everything will go back to normal. But instead he was just like, "Oh, I love this." It was more Homer too. And he's like, "When we get home, let's bump bosoms." So gross. But Frank says that if they don't have competent people left to run things, society will collapse.
"Please, please, if we don't have some competent people left to run things, society will collapse. Coders to run the internet that feeds you the latest misinformation. Pilots to fly the planes you need to be restrained on. I mean a world without experts."
"Does Speaker ever shut up?" Good one, me, Marge.
He then orders an air missile strike to eliminate all of the Homers, including, quite sadly, the touring company of Kinky Boots. Do you know what Kinky Boots is?
Oh.
It's like a drag queen show.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, that show all turned into Homer. Just putting that horrible image into your head. I loved it. And Homer tells Frank that he needs a good back scratch, and he scratches him with the back scratch from earlier, and Frank turns into Homer. That was very clever, because when they did the back scratch bit earlier, I was like, it felt like they added it as a way to fill time. Very random, but then it came back. I was like, oh, okay, it was put there for a reason. And yeah, then everyone turns into Homer and they start singing, "This feels just like living in paradise." It was great fun. And it was a montage of the whole world turning into Homer. We see in New York, every store has turned into either a Krusty Burger, a Lard Lad, or a Moe's. We see Guy Fieri has been elected president.
Why does that make so much sense?
He would love Guy Fieri that much.
Homer would love Guy Fieri.
100%. He's just such a, like, he's a dumb white male, as in Homer, not Guy Fieri. But it just makes sense that, you know, those American, you know, fathers with a lower IQ would love Guy Fieri. Yeah, it's perfect. We see Wimbledon has been turned into, I don't know what the game is, but the one where you, like, throw the beanbag in.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to score 100. Just like a much more easy game than tennis, basically. The Taj Mahal has turned into an all-you-can-eat buffet. And Paris has turned into just a giant Margaritaville, which is Jimmy Buffett's franchise. Two episodes in a row now that made fun of Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah,
it's always hilarious. Again, it just makes sense because he's a very... May he rest in peace, but he was a very, like, you know, music that an older dad would like, you know, an older man. And we cut to Egypt and they're riding lawnmowers on the pyramids. We cut out to Earth and we just see the giant green burps happening and the whole world is turning into Homer. And a beautiful,
perfect
little alternate universe has been created where everyone is Homer and I'm in full approval of it. This one was the best one, for sure. Let's do the review, yeah.
Final
feelings, yeah.
Yeah, so the last Treehouse of Horror was hard to top.
It was, and it didn't.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's good.
It's very, very fun.
It's really
But that one was amazing.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to top that one.
First segment, although I clearly made my feelings known about that. I wasn't the biggest fan. I don't think it's going to age well.
No.
It was good fun.
Yeah.
It made sense to have as the first segment.
Mm-hmm.
But what the great thing about this segment was the animation and all the little Easter eggs they threw in.
They were brilliant,
That was awesome. And so you couldn't dislike it purely for the fact that
it's good fun.
It was for Simpson fans.
Yeah, it's good fun.
The second segment was actually my favourite.
Oh, okay, sure.
Just because...
I wasn't sure.
I do like when The Simpsons go down a darker route.
That was super dark,
and I love the way they brought back the old episode, gave it an alternative ending, an alternative future.
So cool.
Lisa's character in this was great. I'm not always the biggest Lisa fan, but in this episode, I thought it was great, and I love the twist at the end as well.
That's a very alternate version of Lisa, her being messed up because her brother died, you know, and they did that very well, I thought.
And it's such a good idea for a segment.
Very, very clever.
This would have been a great episode overall if they turned
I would have loved it. That would probably be my one critique of that segment. I felt like it could have done with more time.
Yeah.
Because it's such a big concept. They could have even done like what they did with IS last season. It had to be. I would not be against it if they did more of those. That was brilliant. Because there's so much going on there. You could easily have, you know, dive deeper into the investigation and stuff like that. Had more of a dynamic going on with her and Nelson. And that's not a critique. It's just they did the best they could with the little amount of time they had. But it would have been an amazing full episode. Yeah, I agree.
And the third segment was amazing. I mean, a proper...
What more would you want?
Simpsons fan episode.
Exactly.
Just great concept.
Totally.
So silly. Such a nice way to end off what was a dark segment before that.
Totally.
Into like this really lighthearted, fun segment. It was full of laughs. It was full of great moments. Like, you couldn't dislike it.
Yeah. Great. I'm actually just realizing now as well, they kind of did a similar formula to the one they did last season. The first segment was marriage on like a solo adventure. The second one was a darkest one where Lisa was the focus.
Yeah.
And the third one
was
a more fun Homer one.
It's very true.
It's a pretty good formula.
Yeah.
I like it. I think the dark one in the middle is perfect. And then the last one being the more kind of fun and games one is a really good way to do it. Yeah.
So for me, this is... I wouldn't say the first segment let it down, so I would give it an 8.5.
Yeah, me too. 8.5, it's still really, really great. It's hard to compare it to last season, because that one is...
I'm not even sure, what did we give the last one?
I'm pretty sure...
9.5.
I think we both gave it... I think we both gave it an 8.5 originally, and then as we were covering it in our season wrap-up review, I think we both changed it to a 9, because it's fantastic. Yeah, I would even possibly change it to a 9.5.
I probably would as well.
It's aged so well. It's just in my brain, even. Like, the more I think about it, the more I'm like, God, it's
everything
so good.
We're comparing to this as well.
Yeah, because it's such... It's top tier. Yeah, it's such a good... It's my favorite... definitely since I started reviewing the show with you, at least, my favorite episode. It's just so good. And yeah, like I said, it's hard to compare. It's still a really good Treasure Horror. This one, like, yeah, so I agree. The NFT excitement was fun, but my data is immediately. Or at least like soon, I said maybe it could have done with like them doing something that they were parodying NFTs, but they weren't directly saying it was NFTs. Like he could just be said to some digital verse for video games or something, something to make it a bit more less obvious. I don't know. It did date some. It is probably going to date itself, but it's still very enjoyable. I said 8 was brilliant. I loved seeing the alternate future of that episode, and the animation and stuff was brilliant. Like you said. I just said I absolutely love Lout Break. Personally, for me, that was my favorite segment. Loving Homer so much. I mean, you couldn't have picked a better character to be the one that everyone turns into, and seeing all these different versions of these Homer versions of other characters that we love was so good. And yeah, just all around, I gave it 8.5. Though it was a very, very fun Treasure Horror. Hard to compare to the last one, but it's still an absolute joy of an episode. It's still a really, really solid Treasure Horror. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Let's jump into the news then.
Dylan Simpson News.
Just one piece of news this week, but a very, very fun one. I'm not sure if you heard about this. Is Cypress Hill.
Yes.
Yeah. Ah, oh, so great. Yeah. Cypress Hill are going to perform with the London Symphony Orchestra on the 10th of July at the Royal Albert Hall, 28 years after the Homerpalooza gag. And they're doing it purely to make that a reality. It's there were some people online being like, oh my god, Simpsons printed it. But like, no, they're doing it because of the joke. Yeah. They're doing it intentionally to make it a reality. It's not the other way around. It's not a coincidence. It's not like they forgot. No. It's them in the episode. But yeah, that's so cool. I hope they film it because that's going to be sensational to see what 100%. They do. Just like the two total opposites in terms of music. It'd be really fascinating to see. That made me so happy to see that. So that'll be really cool to see what they do. It made me realize, because of them being in Homerpalooza, they must be really old, Cypress Hill.
Yeah, probably.
Because they're like still touring and they look well, but they must be 50. They must be at least, I would say, mid to late 50s. Yeah, they still look well and they're still making great music, so good for them. Still touring and everything. But yeah, really, really, really cool news. Let's jump into Seb's Classics. Very different from a Treehouse of Horror here. A lovely dovey episode.
Lovely dovey episode for Graceful Confidential in the 8th season. So
yes, my favourite season.
You know, the definition of a classic.
Yeah, so it's great.
Everyone knows it.
Can't go wrong with Principal Skinner, as you know, for me.
I put that it's a perfect blend of humour and heart from The Simpsons. Like, you know, and that's when The Simpsons at its best. Like, it was so funny, but then it also had...
Heartfelt, good little moments. Because Skinner and Edna being such lonely people, and it's established well when they get to it here, because we've seen 8 seasons, 8 years worth of them being clearly very lonely people that are always struggling with love. It's surprising they actually didn't think they'd bring them together until this late into the show, because it's kind of obvious.
I think this
timing
was
right, though.
This, when I watched this is completely separate from anything to do with the episode. It just made me realise that I write my reviews and everything and take in The Simpsons episodes a lot better when I watch them in the evening.
Interesting.
And I think that's just because
you're unwinding.
Down.
Yeah, sure.
I'm experiencing it more.
Yeah, I usually watch it in the morning before we record, but maybe I'll try to do it in the evening next time, see what that does for me.
It seems to work for me better that
Interesting.
Way.
Okay.
But yeah, obviously everyone knows this is about Principal Skinner and Mrs. Krabappel.
Hooking up.
I hate saying her name. I really don't.
I love the releases telling him about it. And a great little character detail. She's like, oh, Principal Skinner was kissing Bart's teacher. What's her name again? That was a great character detail. Cause it's like, why would she know Bart's teacher's name?
True.
And then Homer goes, wait, her name is Krabappel? I would call her Crandall. Why didn't anybody
and
tell
he's
me?
So embarrassed.
It was so good, yeah.
I made a fool of myself.
He runs away, yeah. There's only 2 Homer bits in the episode, but they're both great. He has very little to do in it. The other bit was...
He's barely in this episode.
Yeah, very little to do. The other bit was him in the megaphone when Bart's up in the school, and he's like, Bart, I need to tell you something. Where's the remote? He's like, have you checked your pockets? Like, oh, it was in my... And then he turns off the megaphone, just turns the marriage, it was in my pocket. So great.
And I think what I like as well about this episode is that it captures that like small town mentality of Springfield.
Yeah,
well,
everyone getting obsessed with it.
Everyone knows the business by the end of the day.
So true. I love it. He's so great, yeah. I love it. Edna suggests like them getting the town involved rather than like Superintendent Chalmers deciding on whether they get to keep their job or not.
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh, do you want to hear from the Bumblebee Man and the man with a bone in his hair? Oh, yeah, I'm sure they have great opinions." And Sasha Mello's like, "My voice matters just as much as anybody else's." He always is the vocal member of the mob.
I also loved how they tied up the episode. Like, they didn't make
a
big deal out of it. They were just like, "Well, look, we've decided that we're gonna, you know, go our separate ways, like it's not for us, blah blah blah."
Yeah, and it's too much drama.
A little twist because
they're still seeing each
other.
They're
just saying that to Bart, which is really smart and a smart way to end the episode. Because when I first watched it ages ago, I was like, "Oh, what? Like it's just ending like that?"
Yeah,
but then it's
they're still together
for a long time.
Yeah, and we go back to it many, many times over the course of the show after this episode.
Yeah,
there's kind of like a trilogy of them. Is it three episodes?
Yeah, I guess.
It might be three episodes. Yeah, an exact trilogy. Their arc, their relationship is quite tragic, to be honest. And now she's dead,
and
so even more tragic.
Honestly, the best moment of the episode, and probably in my opinion, the best Nelson haha of all time.
Yeah,
is when he's like announcing to everyone, "I am still a virgin."
Oh yeah,
and then everyone's silent because they're shocked that this 44-year-old man is still a virgin. Yeah. And then Nelson just goes, "Ha ha, that's the best
ha ha." Yeah, because he's laughing at an older man being a virgin. It's hilarious. Yeah, that's
the
way...
whole scenario of it. That the whole town's there watching him announcing he's a virgin.
Yeah, it's
such
ridiculous.
A Prince Skinner thing to happen.
So brilliant. You would get so arrested in real life if this happened.
Yeah,
I was like the whole thing of like them kind of like blackmailing Bart. When they're at the cinema and they run into Superintendent Chalmers, and he's like, "Oh, we're here on a field trip with a student," like to Edna, "give me your car keys immediately." And he just like clearly has taken back from his room when he's sleeping.
Yeah, I know. He didn't even address that. He just came in with Bart.
He's in his pajamas. He's like, "Have a sleep." I know they're watching the movie, and like as usual, Chalmers is like none the wiser. He's watching the movie, and Bart's like, "Have a sleep." He leaves it to him being like, "Do you think they really filmed it in Atlanta?" It's like, "I don't know. I don't think it really matters." Like, yeah, you're right. So brilliant. I love how consistent they are with like Chalmers being like the voice of reason, but he's also pretty stupid in many ways. Like, he just doesn't know a lot of things. Yeah. So fun. Delightful episode. I love the beginning as well, of Martin's birthday party, and there's that mathematician.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like a magician for maths. Like, Martin loves him. He's doing it along the vision. And Lisa says something like, "Wait, doesn't 21 go into 7 3 times?" Because he put down that it was 4. He was like, it's a magic 7. Like, fun little randomness like that throughout as well, in great Simpsons fashion.
Yeah.
I mean, the show is always great. It's throwing in random gags that don't matter to the plot, you know.
This is a great episode. It's
for
a,
sure.
I think.
Wonderful, yeah.
9.
9?
It's really solid, man.
Yeah, I think I gave it an 8.5 as well. It's fun. Really fun. 8.5 is obviously still a really high rating. It's good fun. I love Principal Skinner and Edna. Separately as characters and them together, it makes perfect sense. They're a good dynamic because they're such opposites. I love the bit as well where Homer goes, "Wait, does that mean Edna's the virgin as well?" And it just goes, "Ha!" really fun episode. I love the way they involve Bart as well, and the whole sequence and the when they're stuck in the school together, all three of them, they're dancing to the music, and Bart's cringing. I love it being told from Bart's perspective. I thought it was a good way to tell the story. As far as season 8 goes, it would probably be bottom tier for me, but that's
really?
Only because
it's
season 8 is so
season.
Great.
Yeah.
When I look through the episodes in season 8, I'm like, this one doesn't stand out as much as the others, but that's only because it's such a great season. It's still a really great episode. Yeah.
True.
Yeah, wonderful episode. All right, let's move on to Keep It Short. This one is called The Pacifier. The original air date, June 21st, 1987. Sorry, people who might not know the segment is... I haven't seen most of the Tracey Ullman show shorts, so this is me seeing most of them for the first time and covering them as I go. This one's called The Pacifier. Bart and Lisa are taunting Maggie for being a baby. They're like, "Oh, you don't see us going around sucking on our pacifiers?" And they take the pacifier off her, and she runs to her bedroom and sees that she has a drawer full of them. It's very, like, almost like a Looney Tune cartoon. Again, just not what the show would go on to be. Very different. They then call her the brave little infant, and they play piggy in the middle with her and her pacifier, like tossing it around, and she bites Bart's leg, and then we cut to Bart putting hot sauce on the pacifier and put it into her mouth, but she likes it, and she adds more hot sauce, and it concludes with them giving them both a pacifier, and they both end up really liking it. They're like, "Not bad, not bad at all." Fun little variant. It's literally like less than a minute long, but it's very fun and quick. And again, just clearly them not knowing who the characters are yet, because Lisa would never taunt Maggie. You know, it's weird. Like especially Lisa, you see them just like having no idea who she is yet, because she's just like a female version of Bart, which is dull. Like, why would you want that? It's more interesting their dynamics be opposite. Yeah. I was listening to a brilliant interview with Mike Reiss, one of the longest running writers on the show, talking to Four Finger Discount, and he was talking about Some Enchanted Evening. No, There's No Disgrace Like Home was one he was talking about. You know, the one with they're doing the group therapy together and they're all electrocuting each other. He was talking about that one. How like when you watch it now, it's just so wrong, because Homer like sells the TV to afford the family therapy he'd never do. He's embarrassed by the family. Marge gets like drunk at the party and stuff. And Lisa's like being so a brat off. And everything. Like, yeah, all the character dynamics are so off, with the exception of Bart, I guess. But yeah, like that would be roles reversed. Marge would be the one being ashamed of their family, and Homer would be the one getting drunk. And yeah, Lisa would never ever taunt anybody. And there's also a line where she says something like, I was throwing stones at the ducks. Like, never, ever, ever would you do that, you know? It's such a good point. But yeah, fun little segment. Let's jump on into recommendation of the week. Rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors. Rock, paper, scissors. I was trying to help you that time. Oh well.
For sure that you were going through the whole rotation. You did rock, you did paper, and I thought you were going to do scissors, which is why I went for rock again.
Apologies. You win some, you lose some.
Lose everyone.
If this is the thing that you're most upset about in life, got a pretty good life.
True.
Look at it that way.
Yeah, or a pretty sad life. Pretty boring one.
Nothing wrong with a boring life as long as you're happy. My first recommendation is a brilliant thriller novel I read recently by Gillian Flynn, who was most famous for Gone Girl. I wanted to read more of her more obscure novels for a while, and I finally read Dark Places. Fantastic. It's basically about this girl who...
Did you buy it new or secondhand?
My mom actually got it for Christmas, so probably new.
Because I can see it on your shelf, and you've destroyed it.
I guess just moving it around the place and stuff, yeah.
Happens to me. Being in my bag. I put a book in my bag and it just gets bad.
Yeah. I like books kind of looking worn, though. I like that kind of feel to it. Yeah, even like when I buy like a book in a charity shop for like £1, I don't mind it being like a little bit torn,
No, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no.
I prefer reading paperback as well, like being able to just hold it in my
bag. Every day of the week, over a hardcover, of course. Yeah, screw hardbacks. They're a pain in the ass.
They are.
You gotta like put it on your lap and everything. But yeah, Dark Place is a brilliant novel. Not too different from the plot of 8, now that I'm thinking about it. It's just about this girl who her brother killed her mom, her two sisters, years and years and years ago. And she gets involved with all these people who have conspiracy theories about what actually happened that day. And she gets involved, and it's because she needs money and they're willing to pay her to investigate it. And she finds out that maybe it wasn't her brother who killed them all. Okay. And that's all I'll say about it. That's the basic setup, but where it goes from there, it's plot twist after plot twist. I couldn't put it away. It was just filled with whenever you thought you knew what was going to happen, something else happened instead. It was just brilliantly written. She's such a good writer, and she's not afraid to go really, really dark and just like creepy and like terrifying areas, just like make your skin crawl. Nice. Exceptional writer. Yeah, the book blew me away. One of my favorite novels I've read in a while. I don't want to get too deep in the plot because of that reason. It's just worth a read.
Yeah.
Especially people who like mystery novels and thrillers and stuff. It made me want to read more mystery novels. I haven't read many, but God, when one is well written, you just get so locked and lost in it, you know? So focused 100%. on what's happening.
The thing is with me is I'm not a mad fiction guy. I read mainly non-fiction.
Yeah. Oh, that's true, actually. Yeah, whenever you recommend something here, it's a biography.
I barely read fiction.
Yeah, that's
fiction
true.
To me is
I never made that connection.
TV.
No, yeah,
like,
fair enough.
Also, I was just going to say on another topic, isn't it funny how The Half-Blood Prince is the biggest Harry Potter book, yet the film seems like the least amount happens in it?
That's Order of the Phoenix, but I would say that point even more so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually the shortest movie.
Yeah.
The biggest book. It's like 850 pages.
It must have missed out a lot.
I guess so. I mean, I haven't read the book yet. I'm slowly getting through the Harry Potter books. I've read I've only read the first three now, which I haven't recommended because why would I? They're brilliant. And she's an exceptional writer, but obviously like,
everyone knows Harry Potter.
Yeah, exactly. She
recommended Harry Potter.
Yeah, well, nonsense. But I mean, she is an exceptional writer. I got so lost in, especially Prisoner of Azkaban, I think is exceptionally well written.
That's my favourite book and movie.
Yeah, so, really, yeah. I haven't read the other four books yet, but yeah, so far Prisoner of Azkaban, definitely my favourite. But yeah, Order of Phoenix is a weird one, because yeah, I remember that movie, not much happens in it, but the book is 850 pages, so I'm guessing they left out a whole bunch.
Yeah,
looking forward to getting to it. But yeah, what's your first recommendation then, Mr. Seb?
So my recommendation for the week,
Mr. Seb,
is Moneyball.
Moneyball.
Yes,
the Moneyball, Brad Pitt movie.
Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill.
Interesting.
Didn't realize. I mean, I've seen it. I'd seen it before. Last week, I gave it a watch with my girlfriend, and because I saw it pop up, and I was like, "You need to see this movie."
Yeah,
classic guy recommending his girlfriend a sports movie. But oh my god, have you seen it?
Years ago, I've never really liking it, but yeah, it's been a while. Oh my god, it's not fresh in my brain anymore.
I remember I watched it again this time, and I was like, "That film was so well written." And then I found out Aaron Sorkin wrote.
Oh, is it? I was just wondering, was it him? Yeah, it was.
Like, oh, well, that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, one of the best in the business. Yeah, yeah.
And this movie is great because you don't need to know about baseball. Because it's not really about baseball, it's everything that comes with it.
Yeah.
And acting, 10 out of 10.
Oh, yeah.
Top tier.
Jonah Hill does not get enough credit for what a great dramatic actor he also is. I think he's better, I think he stands out more in Moneyball than he does in Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, for sure.
Just because Wolf of Wall Street, he's still playing a very silly part. He's
still, yeah.
But he's really dramatic and really good in Moneyball.
I know, man. I mean, Jonah Hill is one of my favorite actors ever.
He's great, and I'm gonna say something controversial here. I hope he continues to get to have a career, because he had that whole controversy a few months ago. But what, he had a little bit of a toxic relationship where he was a little bit mean to his girlfriend. That's all it was some dodgy text messages. We've all done that. Give the man a second chance, for God's sake. It's not that bad. We're so obsessed with cancelling everybody nowadays. Like, I think
it's what, because they were having an argument and he said some out pocket stuff.
Yeah, everyone in history has done that. People are obsessed with, like, sometimes it's almost like you're pointing out a flaw, maybe something you've done before, and you see somebody else doing it, so to make yourself look good, you're like, that's wrong.
Well, my whole my theory on the reason why a lot of people are like this is because they're too ashamed of themselves. And
totally.
Like,
so it makes you feel good to point the finger at somebody else being flawed.
Exactly.
Which is a massive flaw in yourself as a person. It's not a way to live.
Yeah, I think if anyone wants to watch a film with a great narrative that's contained with excellent writing, watch Moneyball.
Yeah.
It's such a great story. It's a true story. It's a hopeful story. And
it is. It's beautiful,
It's nice to see Brad Pitt as well, not in one of his, you know, like, blockbuster roles. He's in a really, like, strict role.
Yeah, the inspiring coach. Yeah.
You know.
Totally.
It's a great movie.
You're making me want to rewatch it now. I haven't seen it in years and years. I didn't know Aaron Sorkin wrote it, but it makes so much sense now, even thinking about that great monologue where he goes, you know, there's good teams and there are bad teams. Then there's 50 feet of crap. And then there's us.
Yeah.
That's such a great monologue.
That's
such a good line. Oh, so, so good. Okay, great movie. Awesome. My final recommendation is Mindful Metal Jacket. So do you remember that comedian I spoke about recently, Joe List?
Yeah.
I recommend him, like, just as a comedian, just, like, jumping into his content. As I listen to, so he has one podcast, Tuesdays of Stories, with Mark Norman. And he has this podcast as well, Mindful Metal Jacket. Brilliant podcast. It's basically just all about mental health. And he brings in a guest every week, usually a comedian, sometimes other people. And they just kind of talk about their anxieties or things that they struggle with and stuff like that. And it's just really, like, relatable and kind of reassuring to listen to, you know. I think especially for people who are, like, pursuing a career as a comedian or even just a creative in general. It's really refreshing and kind of inspiring in a weird way to hear about, like, people who have made it still having these kind of insecurities that, like, you would hope go away once you've had some success. But it's like, you had to just deal with these problems. It's not going to go away because you're starting to make money doing what you love. You know, it's really reassuring and, like, as I said, inspiring in a weird way to listen to.
Yeah.
There's no, like, you just have to take care of your mental health. It's as simple as that. Like, all this glittering gold is going to take it away. You have to work on it personally, you know? Really, really great podcast. Yeah. He's great. Like, he never takes it too seriously. Like, he still has fun with it, but he's also not afraid to kind of go with the deeper areas with his guests too. It's a great little interview. Yeah. Yeah, wonderful, wonderful, like, different little podcast. It's nowhere near as big as other ones, so I think it deserves a recommendation there for sure. Every week it's been like, people please recommend the podcast. I want to keep doing this, but it's not getting enough traction. So I think it deserves it, because I think it's a great podcast, and it does sound like it needs more views than it's getting. Yeah, it is, yeah. Anyone would benefit from listening to it, because, you know, no one's perfect. Everyone has anxieties and insecurities and stuff like that, so I think it's just relatable and reassuring to hear other people talk about it. Just know that you're not alone, you know. Wonderful podcast, yeah. Cool. Do you have any second one?
Actually don't.
That was it? This cool. Week, yeah. No worries at all.
Questions.
In that case, yes, let's jump into questions. So we have three this week.
Jesus.
Yeah, when I posted about it, I mentioned that we were reviewing Trials of Horror, so I think that got people's attention a bit more. So we have...
Are they all Simpsons related?
No. So two are Simpsons and one is...
Cool. Start with the Simpsons one.
Start
with
Simpsons one, yeah. Sure. So George Diamond, a wonderful comedian that I know.
What great name.
Interesting. Yeah, it is a great name. Especially for a comedian. He asked, do you think... Interesting question, actually. Very interesting question. Do you think the movie could have worked as an episode?
No.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say could have, because they've done crazier plots in 20 minutes as well. Crazy plots that could have been...
Plots that didn't work, though.
What do you mean?
Would you say the plots that they've... The crazy plots that they managed to fit in 20 minutes... Did they work?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's plenty, like the monorail as a random example. That's true. That episode is crazy and could have been a movie, but they managed to fit in 20 minutes. So I would say, yeah, I'm sure there's a version of this plot that could have been 20 minutes, but it's far better off as a movie.
I think, you know, you could make it an episode, but I don't think it'd work.
Yeah.
Therefore, I would say no.
Yeah. I mean, like, obviously, if it was an episode... All the kind of side plots and things going on in the movie that make it so special couldn't have happened. Like, you couldn't have had the whole conflict with Bart and Homer, where Bart sees Flanders as a father figure.
And Alaska would be like a minute.
Yeah, exactly. All these things have to be trimmed massively. I think Marge wouldn't run away, because that takes up too much time. It would just be the dome, then running away and then coming back, you know?
Yeah.
Which is fine. It could have been a perfectly fine episode, but it's far better off being a movie. Yeah. I wouldn't have changed it, is my point. No. But I wouldn't say no to that question.
Okay.
But I prefer it as it is, as a wonderful, wonderful 90-minute movie, and I couldn't think of any other plot that could have been a movie.
Yeah,
you know, they sure. Really paint the perfect story that they could stretch out into a film for sure. Yeah, our second Simpsons question once again comes from Barrett. He goes,
oh, biggest fan though.
Yeah,
used to be someone else, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, who was it before? You're right. It was another Simpsons page. That person kind of disappeared now.
Maybe it was Bart.
Oh, no, it wasn't Simpsons page. It was that guy, Timothy Burleson. Yeah, I hadn't heard from him in a while. He was a good fan. I hope he's still listening. I don't know, but he doesn't ask questions anymore. If you are listening, Timothy, keep asking
just
questions, man.
You
have some great questions. Yeah, no, maybe he answered every question he wanted us to ask, to answer. But yeah, a great question from Barrett Art again. He just goes, what's your second favorite animated series? Simpsons obviously being our first.
I mean... I can't not say SpongeBob.
Oh, of course it's SpongeBob, yeah.
Just
silly
because
me.
It's so important to me.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And everything, and...
Yeah, the tattoo.
Yeah.
You've mentioned before that it's kind of shaped your sense of humor in a way.
For
and,
sure, and it's a part of me, and...
Yeah.
It still holds up. I think it's timeless.
It's great.
It's a timeless show.
Yeah.
I will make the argument that, obviously, the newer seasons aren't great, but SpongeBob had, like, The Simpsons, its golden era.
For sure. Those first three seasons and the first movie, untouchable. Like, just brilliant.
I mean, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but The Simpsons is my second.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I would know that. Yeah. I could have guessed that. Yeah, of course. Yeah, SpongeBob is more nostalgic, more personal to you. That's totally fine. Maybe we should do a SpongeBob podcast as well. A very short one, and after season three. But yeah, no, I mean, SpongeBob is great. That's definitely up there for me as well. I loved it growing up. The movie is amazing. And it is one that I will always return to for sure. The YouTuber I love, Joel Hayward, did a beautiful video essay about the SpongeBob movie. He said a quote that really stuck with me. It was like, if my life consists of viewings of the SpongeBob movie, that's a pretty good life. I was like, yeah, I agree with him. It's just such a perfect film. It's so
really
funny.
Yeah.
It's just joke. I actually think, I did a sad screening of it about a year ago now, I actually think it's one of the funniest movies out there. It's
it
so consistently hilarious.
Yeah.
It's so good. My second animated series, it'd be a toss-up between Family Guy and South Park. I know this is a controversial opinion,
yeah,
but I think I would put Family Guy ahead ever so slightly, because Family Guy has that nostalgia for me.
Yeah.
I grew up watching it when I was way too young. I still watch it today. I love Brian, Stewie, and Peter.
It's really hard to pick between the two, because they are so different.
Yeah.
South Park would honestly edge it for me.
Yeah, that's fair. I think most people would agree with you there.
I've watched fucking loads of Family Guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I love it, but I think South Park just about edges it for me.
Yeah, South Park's more tongue-in-cheek. It tackles the social commentaries and stuff in a fun way. I mean, I love South Park, don't get me wrong. I think Family Guy just has a bit more of nostalgia for me. I think growing up, what I loved about Family Guy was, like, it was like The Simpsons, but it had more of an edge to it, you know? So it was a different thing to watch later on in the evening after watching The Simpsons, you know? So, yeah, it has that personal thing for me. I mean, I've loved so many animated series. Like, I'd be remiss not to mention, like, Futurama as well and American Dad. There's so many great animated series out there, but those would be my top ones for sure. Those are the big boys. And, yeah, our final question comes from Leah Wood, a great friend of mine from Ireland. I guess asked this question specifically because of Jurassic Horror. She said, favourite and least favourite horror movie?
Favourite and least favourite horror movie.
Yeah, great one, right?
Favourite horror movie.
Yeah.
Of all time, Evil Dead.
Evil Dead, cool. The first one?
Yeah.
Nice.
Least favourite horror movie of all time. It's difficult.
I mean, there's lots of shit ones out there.
Of course.
Yeah.
Least favourite, I'm going to go... Oh, man. That's really difficult.
Do you want me to say my favourites first?
Yeah, go for it.
I think my first favourite, and again, controversial opinion, I love Us. I like Us more than Get Out. I've watched Us, I think, 4 or 5 times. I think it's just so well written. The film's spectacularly. Everything about Us I love. So that's up. That's probably my favourite. But like honourable mentions, I would also say I love Barbarian. I love the first Halloween so much. I also love the 2018 one. I'm obsessed with the Halloween franchise. Even the bad Halloweens I like.
Okay, that's I've decided my there. Least favorite.
Yeah.
Jason X.
Jason X, interestingly. Is that the one where he goes to space?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Just because...
I haven't seen it. It's ridiculous. Aged
so horrendous.
Oh, really?
And it kind of ruined any sort of like scariness and creepiness that Freddy had for me.
Of course, yeah, because it's a sci-fi film. When you say Jason X, is it the 10th Friday the 13th movie?
No, it's just called Jason X.
Oh, okay, random. Okay, but, yeah.
Another couple more favorites. The Witch.
Yes, I haven't seen it.
I'm
a bad man.
The YouTube series Marvel Hornets. If anyone wants to be absolutely fucking terrified...
Marble Hornets. Okay, no, never heard of
that. Anyone wants to be absolutely terrified beyond comprehension and creeped out beyond comprehension and, like, can't leave their room to go to the toilet...
Watch this podcast.
Watch Marble Hornets, the YouTube series.
Yeah.
It seems real. That's how, like...
Jeez, I've never heard this.
I think... When it first came out, people thought it was real.
Right.
Yeah.
Fascinating. I never even heard of this. That sounds brilliant.
It's amazing.
You caught my attention for sure. I'll look it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least here for me, one that comes to my head immediately. I know I just said I like Halloween movies, even the bad ones, but the exception is the fourth one. Halloween 4, The Curse of Michael Myers.
Oh, yeah.
That movie is so bad. The ending, especially, is an absolute mess. It's Halloween 6, not 4.
Yeah.
Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers. The ending is especially an absolute mess because the actor who played Dr. Sam Loomis, I forget his name now, Donald Pleasance, he died before they did the first test screening, and the ending test screened so badly that they refilmed the ending but just put in the bits they had of him already.
Oh, okay.
So it makes no sense. It's so confusing. So the movie's already bad leading up to it, and then you have a finale that it makes no fucking sense. That just makes things even worse.
Another one, I don't know if you can count it as a horror movie.
Yeah.
The Goosebumps movie with Jack Black, fucking terrible.
What? I love the first Goosebumps.
Absolutely.
Ah, terrible. I disagree. I really like it. I think it's good fun.
It took away anything. Fair enough.
Any actual
scariness from Goosebumps. It made a joke of it.
Yeah. I understand that, but no, I still had fun with it, I have to say. I think it's a fun movie. I heard the second one is no good, but I haven't seen that. I had fun with Goosebumps. Fair enough. For me, I actually still enjoy horror films when they're bad. So for the most part, I don't really feel like an animosity towards bad horrors.
Most movies are bad.
Yeah, but there's good fun. Yeah, totally. I still have a good time watching them. Oh, another favorite for me would be Bull Creep movies. I know I've mentioned previously. Oh, yeah. Great. Amazing, Martin Blass, sensational.
Blair Witch. As a you know, similar concept.
Yeah, yeah. And, found footage.
The Shining is...
Oh, Jesus! How about The Shining?
Is top three.
There's so much great horrors. Yeah, The Shining is up there too. My God, the Isle of The Shining. The Shining is a great horror of like what you can do with just the actor being so good that he's petrifying. Jack Nicholson just annihilates that film. And obviously, Stanley Kubrick's exceptional directing also. Yeah, I mean, I could go on. I'm a big horror nut, but those are my top
last
few.
One for me, sorry. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh God, there's so many great horrors out there for sure. I could keep going. I love the first Candyman also. Mm. Psycho, I mean, that's Hitchcock.
I quite like the new Candyman.
Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah, the Jordan Peele one, it was good. It wasn't amazing, but I still enjoyed it. Yeah. I don't know, horrors are so dark and creepy that even when they're not amazing, you can still kind of get chilled and enjoy it. I saw Immaculate recently, which wouldn't be a favorite or least favorite horror, just kind of bang in the middle. The one where Sydney Sweeney, where she plays a nun, still, it's just an enjoyable film. It's just fun to get lost in. The thing when you watch horrors, you can't think about anything else because you get lost in the chills and the thrills of it all. That's what I love about horror films, yeah. But yeah, thank you guys so much. They were brilliant questions. And I think we'll wrap it up from there. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. I haven't said it in a while. I'm going to say it right now. I want to have your babies. We're shaking hands right now. It's very intense. And it's done. And see you guys really soon. Bye-bye.